Okay, ladies and gentlemen, at this point I'd like to introduce the head table. And let me give you a little description. I am here on the podium in the middle. And as you're looking at me, there are four people to the left of the podium and four people to the right of the podium. And if you look all the way to your right, you would see John Chang. And next to him is the lovely Julia Chang. And then as you get closer to the podium, you will see the handsome Francisco Chang. And right to the right of the podium is the beautiful affiliate president, Patty Chang. And now as you look to the left of the podium, as we work from the podium to the left, you have my wife, Nancy Gardner. Oh, I forgot to mention, I was going to give some credentials here, too. Patty, besides being the president of our state affiliate, is also a member of the board of directors of the National Federation of the Blind. I think that needs to be noted. Next to Nancy, as you go outboard from the podium, is our national rep, Mark Riccobono. He's the executive director of the Jernigan Institute at the National Center. And then furthest to your left is Debbie Stein. Had a brain freeze there for a minute. Debbie has many, many credentials. She's the president of the Chicago chapter. She's first vice president of the state affiliate. At the national level, she is the chairman of the Blind Parents Group and also chairman of the Quiet Cars Group, or committee. It's a committee, I believe. And now I would like to have Patty Chang come to a microphone. Patty is going to make a special award.
Leanne's going to give me cordless and she can hold it. Okay. Not ready yet. Leanne's ready to be cordless. I could make myself heard, though. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to read from my Braille note. With one hand, so I'm going to set it up here because I think that'll make it work. All right. Now, this next presentation is something that I think is really special. We don't give out a whole lot of awards as the NFBI, and this a recipient is someone that I met when I first came into the affiliate, and I distinctly remember having dinner with her and her daughter and her husband and thinking, what a lovely family. And she expects so much, and she's so intelligent. Now, I asked her daughter to write a little bit about her, and this woman is a graduate of the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
All right, Illini. She is a history major. She loves to play sports, and she adores bridge. But first and foremost, She is a social butterfly. She loves people. And that has come across to me ever since I've known her. This award, Friend of the NFB, goes to Catherine Horn Barnum. Now, Kay, I want you to... I can't call you Catherine, Kay. I just can't quite get used to that. Come on up. I'm going to read what the plaques, what the certificate says, okay? Right here for the moment.
Okay?
Right by me.
All right.
Congratulations. All right, let me read this. Can you hear me? Oh, let me find it first. Like technology. Okay. This certificate says, Friend of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois. Catherine Horn Barnum, for years, has demonstrated commitment to achieving, Alan, to achieving the goals of equality, security, and opportunity for the blind, espoused by the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois. In recognition of long-term support, love, and friendship, we, the members of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, it's Braille, okay? I don't think you can help. We the members of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois sincerely thank Catherine Horn Barnum for her devotion and support. With gratitude, we present Catherine Horn Barnum with this Friend of the NFBI Award this 18th day of October, 2008, in the city of Bradley, Illinois. And I signed it. Congratulations, Kay.
Well, thank you, Patty, and thank you to all of you. I love you all. I've been around for a long time, as you can tell. And that's why Patty had to present this award to me down here on the main floor, because there's no railing over there, and I'm 88 years old. And see, I have a cane, too. Yeah. Well, I'm Kathy Randall's mother, and I guess that's one of the proudest things I know to say. I've just loved it, and it's because of the National Federation of Blind that she's become so independent. She, yeah. But anyway, you're a grand group of people, and it's really meant a lot to me because you've done so much for my daughter. And thank you from the bottom of my heart.
All right. We love you, Kay.
Okay, would the 40th anniversary planning committee come forward, please? And also, I'd like, in case you haven't noticed it, on your tables, there's a little bell, right? The bell in a lot of ways for the NFB, the National Federation of the Blind, has symbolized freedom. And we've heard a lot about freedom at this convention. At least I keep hearing a lot about it. I was thinking today, I mentioned earlier about the students, the kids that were up front today, and I think a lot of what they were saying is how the philosophy of the NFB gives them independence, gives them confidence, and that translates into freedom. Another place where you see the bell and freedom associated is in the NFB training centers, where we have the Freedom Bell. And there, when the students achieve certain specific events in their training that are significant, they get to ring the Freedom Bell and celebrate that with the rest of the students and the staff. So tonight, during the 40th anniversary, you each have your own little tiny Freedom Bell. And when you feel the urge during this presentation, go ahead and ring your Freedom Bell. The committee is going to come up. We're going to have some speakers. It's hard to summarize 40 years in 30 minutes, but we are going to try, and I'm going to try and make the Planning Committee see if they can adhere to that also. There you are. Okay. I'm going to let the Planning Committee introduce themselves. First, I need to talk to them for just a minute.
Okay. I'm Steve Hestalis. I'm a charter member of this affiliate. And we began 40 years ago as the Illinois Congress of the Blind on Saturday, August 10, 1968, at the then Sherman House Hotel in downtown Chicago. Our early accomplishments continue to guide us in our history, as my colleagues who follow me will attest. We elected Rami Rabi, our first president, for the first 2 years. He continued participating actively as legislative chairman and editor of our publication, The Month's News, until he left Chicago in 1977. The NFB's advocacy, both in Congress and federal court, assisted him in his later career, as he served as a Foreign Service officer in the U.S. State Department until he retired and moved back to his country of origin and his birthplace, Tel Aviv, Israel. In 1969, we successfully advocated for passage of the Illinois White Cane Law based on the Model White Cane Law Act, which Professor Dr. Jacobus Tenbrook, noted law professor and our founding president, wrote. This law contains non-discrimination language, which lists various modes of public transportation. It states that these and places to which the public is invited cannot treat people differently based on blindness or disability. In early 1970, Channel 5 in Chicago showed an investigative report on poor wages and working conditions at the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind. In 1972, we joined the trend which Dr. Kenneth Jernigan, then our president, set forth when we changed our name to National Federation of the Blind of Illinois. In 1973, the Illinois General Assembly enacted fair housing legislation, which included non-discrimination language about tenants and guide dogs. Landlords could not charge higher rents, but could only charge more if the dogs caused damage. We supported an effort to expand the Fair Employment Practices Commission to include people with disabilities. We came back 2 years later and successfully helped get this legislation enacted in 1975. John Bill Myers served as our second president from 1970 to 1974. We then elected Alan Schaefer. Also, his wife Ruth Ann served as treasurer, and they served with distinction for the next 4 years. Many of us knew Alan and Ruth Schaefer well and loved them dearly. Rami Rabbi asked Peter Grunewald to serve as legislative chairman, this at the convention of state convention of 1974. Peter did so until 1992, helping to bring many of our initiatives into fruition. In 1975, we called for major reforms of services to the blind in Illinois. First, we proposed an advisory council to the DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services, which then administered several programs for the blind. IVHI, Illinois Visually Handicapped Institute, which is now Illinois Center for Rehab and Education, ICRE, Community Services for the Visually Handicapped, which is part of the home teaching program, I guess, and then Illinois Braille and Sight Saving School, which is now Illinois School for the Visually Impaired in Jacksonville. We had a good reception from the legislators initially, but agency officials mounted vigorous opposition. More significantly, we proposed an Illinois Commission for the Blind, which would have combined and administered services to the blind as one coordinated program. We stood alone, advocating a positive philosophy of blindness and of truly quality services. Also, at about that time, we secured passage of legislation establishing the Illinois identification card. If you do not drive, you can get this card from the Illinois Secretary of State's office, any Department of Motor Vehicles facility, or the Thompson Center in downtown Chicago. You can use it when you need ID for a bank transaction. This has become particularly important in recent years every time airline, Amtrak, or Greyhound personnel ask to see photo ID. We in this affiliate worked with our national organization and secured landmark change in which the National Labor Relations Board, NLRB, reclassified sheltered workshops as factories, not rehabilitation facilities. Thus, the National Labor Relations Board took jurisdiction of a union organizing election at the workshop of the Chicago Lighthouse for people who are blind and visually impaired. Mary Lou Grunewald will report on her involvement in this activity and other NFB of Illinois events of the later 1970s. And I understand that we have also some recordings of Steve Benson, who served as president from 1978 to 2002, Alan Schaefer, who served as president from 74 to 78, and Charlene Elder, who then was Scannavino. And I give you now Bill Reif and Mary Lou Grunewald. Thank you.
This is a blast from our past.
70 miles southwest of Chicago. It's a quiet town in a rural setting, and the local school has a music man. Everybody there thinks he's something special, and Rich Samuels found out why.
Alan Schaefer is driven to work by his wife most mornings, like countless others across the country. And that obscures the fact that Alan Schaefer is unique in several important respects. First, he's the only one of Mazan, Illinois' 750 residents who's blind. Second, in spite of his loss of sight 9 years ago, he's accomplished more than perhaps anyone in this small rural town. Schaefer's been teaching music at Mazan's elementary school for almost 2 decades. He has an exceptional ability to convey his love of music to others. His students have won 45 awards this year. Last month, his chorus was judged the best in the state.
Here we go. As I lost my sight, I think I lost a lot of my confidence. I wasn't sure whether I could continue teaching like I had been, whether I'd be able to read a band score, how I would learn my choral music, and how I would handle the students. At one time, one school administrator said, maybe I should just sit home in a rocking chair and draw a disability that I could get through my teacher's pension.
Schaefer's work does not end when he leaves school. As the state president of the National Federation of the Blind, he will try to persuade employers and civic groups that blindness is a physical nuisance, not a major disability.
I think that with proper training, a blind person can live a normal life, and I think that you restore your confidence, and you can go right on, and blindness need not be the end of the world.
And this week, he'll write some 100 blind persons trying to convince them that they can be independent, that they can do as he has done. From Mazan, Illinois, this is Rich Samuels, News 5.
Me are three very interesting people. Steve Benson, the first vice president of the National Federation of the Blind, also president of the Chicago chapter. We have with us the president of that organization, from the state of Illinois, Alan Schaefer from Mazan, and the secretary, Charlene Scannavino from Gardner. And it's amazing to note that Grundy County has two out of the three big officers from this organization. And they're our guests today. We'd like to talk with them and find out just what it is like to be a blind person and to cope with the things they do, and how successful they are at it, and perhaps probe into what the National Federation of the Blind is all about, and perhaps we can learn more about these folks and others with a similar situation. Okay, let's talk about your function as president of the organization. When were you elected, and what are your official duties?
We have a state convention each year, and in August it was held in Peoria, and at that time I was elected president, and this means that I'm over the various chapters in the state and in charge of recruiting new members for the organization, and I'll be in charge of the state convention for next year, as well as the board meetings, which are taking place about once a month at the present time.
Now, what is the function of the National Federation of the Blind? Just what can this unit do as an organization?
Well, the National Federation of the Blind is involved in integrating the blind into society on a basis of equality, and we are trying to remove legal and economic and social discriminations. We are trying to educate the public in new concepts about blindness, and we want to give each blind person the opportunity to achieve whatever he would like to the best of his abilities.
Obviously, there must be quite a few blind people in that chapter in Chicago.
Well, currently, the Chicago chapter, of course, is the largest in the state, simply by virtue of the fact that Chicago is the largest city. Essentially, the duties parallel those of the state president, although there are some additional duties. Since I'm more at the grassroots level, you might say, there are all sorts of chapter functions and projects that I have to preside over or coordinate, appointing committees to do various types of jobs and so on.
Could you detail some of those?
We are in the midst of recruiting members. We are in the midst of the largest membership drive we have had in Illinois since our founding in 1968. We are also developing what I call a White Cane Week project. Each year from May 15th to May 22nd, the National Federation of the Blind observes White Cane Week, and we are going to do several things during that week. It's still in the planning stages, so nothing has really been finalized, but among the things that we are talking about is conducting a seminar or seminars for ophthalmologists and optometrists, informing them of what really blindness is and what it is not, and enlightening to them to the fact that even though a guy is blind, he can still live and work and grow and prosper in the society, given the proper training and opportunity. Very often, unfortunately, ophthalmologists see blindness as a personal failure. And after a guy becomes blind, the ophthalmologists sometimes often consider that their job is done and don't provide any information as to what the guy who has lost his sight should do and can do, where to go for services and so on. So we're going
to move over to Charlotte Scanavino of Gardner, the secretary of the organization. Charlotte, what are your duties? What do you do as the secretary?
Well, I'm responsible for taking the secretarial notes of all the state board meetings. I'm also responsible for keeping track of all large members in the state. Like, one can become an at-large member, even though he may not be able to attend, for example, the Chicago chapter meetings. But just being an at-large, interested member in the state, and I'm sort of responsible for taking care of all these people and seeing that they're accounted for and this type of thing.
Okay, I'd like to perhaps generate some discussion into the problems of blind people, what blind people face as far as living their minds.
During the 1970s, I worked at the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind as a factory worker and also in some child care duties with their special needs children. The Chicago Lighthouse is a very different place than it was in those days. In those days, I and others had concern about the subminimum wages that were being paid in the workshops. And I worked, along with others, vigorously statewide and nationally to form a union there. The attempt was unsuccessful only by a couple of votes, but I think that it moved the process along to part of where it is today. I grew during this time as well. I found out that I too had a voice and I too could change what it means to be blind. In 1978, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners issued regulations that would prohibit discrimination in the sale of insurance to blind people. This was something that my husband and many members of this organization worked very, very diligently on in that year, during that time span, and it did have national implications. And I would like now to turn this over to Mr. Bill Reif.
Okay, our issues continued in the 80s in many respects. I was initially exposed to the Federation in 1974 or so. I had come to a seminar at the St. Nicholas Hotel, but I didn't actually get involved until coming to Springfield in 1980. Pam Rotman and Charlene and I started a chapter. Our legislative efforts continued, some of which I was involved in, some of which I knew about. In 1982, the Bureau of the Blind was put together, and establishing the Blind Services Planning Council. And, you know, this was actually a compromise to what we hoped would have been a commission for the blind. Had the promise of working for a time until the Bureau and DOORS itself were buried under multiple layers. Nevertheless, our commitment to services for the blind actually led us to defend the Illinois Visually Handicapped Institute against then efforts to close it, even though it wasn't certainly the philosophy we had hoped for at the time. Meanwhile, training, the National Federation of the Blind began establishing its own training centers operated on the model of centers, the center in Des Moines, through 1985 through 1990, the centers in Minnesota, Blind Inc. in Minnesota, the Louisiana Center, and the Colorado Center were formed. Our commitment to Braille literacy continued, and was successful in the establishment of in the passage of the Braille Literacy Act in. Which takes us into the 90s, and so I will introduce Ronza.
You introduced Dave.
Dave, I'm sorry.
One of the things that had not previously been mentioned is Illinois' role in national conventions. Illinois actually planned several national conventions during the time of our affiliate. I believe the first was in 1972 in Chicago. We were also in Chicago in 1974 and 1975. Those three conventions were at the Palmer House in Chicago. Now the Palmer House Hilton, or possibly it's the Hilton, I'm not sure.
Yes, sir.
In 1988, we had our convention at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago. Our final convention, at least from a national standpoint, was in 1995 at the Hilton and Towers, also in Chicago. Getting back to literacy, which is what Bill was leading up to, we were among many states to pass what were referred to as Braille bills, saying that, in essence, that every child had the right to learn Braille unless the team were to disagree that the child would not benefit from Braille. This led to language that has since been inserted in IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, in 2004. Or actually, or maybe it was 2002. I know the 2004 version does have essentially our language. We also saw the beginning nationally of NFB Newsline, which began in 1995. It was carried on in Illinois beginning in 1997. And in 1997, we in Illinois probably had the largest representation of Newsline of any of the states within the country. The Chicago Tribune was one of the chartered papers on that network. We had 10 separate boxes or 10 separate areas that people could call into from various parts of the state to receive any of the newspapers that NFB Newsline carried at that time. The 1990s saw substantial growth in the number of NFB Newsline users. In fact, at one time, there were almost 7,000 registered with NFB Newsline. In the 2000s, NFB Newsline took a hit of sorts. There were funding problems, and there was an attempt as a result of funding problems to get rid of Newsline altogether. That was when both the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois and the Chicago chapter began to pay for NFB Newsline on a monthly basis out of our own pockets. Some of us actually donated money towards the cause, and we managed to keep NFB Newsline alive long enough for money to be reinstated for one more year. In 2004, NFB Newsline became an issue which was, or became an entity which was permanently funded in Illinois and enjoys that status today. We also, unfortunately, witnessed the passing of Dr. Jernigan in 1998. Thanks to the leadership that he orchestrated and that the Federation took up in the person of Mark Maurer, things continued on a growing and accelerated rate. And this brings to the conclusion my portion of the evening. Thank you.
Good evening, fellow Federationists. I am honored to be here tonight to reminisce a bit about my 24, 25 years in the NFBI, and I'll make this quick. I believe I joined the state board in about 1986, and from 86 to 96, I edited the month's news. Which became the Braille Examiner, thanks to, I think, the great name choice by Bill Isaacs. And I think it was sometime in that 10-year period that we changed names of the newsletter. Also, Newsline, I had the privilege of serving and working on the pilot project for Newsline, and the State Library was wonderful in helping us get that started and funding it, and I'll never forget Bridget Lamont saying to me at a State Library Advisory Committee meeting one day, "Kathy, what one thing could we do through the State Library that might help blind people?" And the one thing that jumped into my mind was Newsline, Bridget, Newsline. So we began working toward the funding of the pilot project and later the whole program, and I read it almost daily, so I am really reaping what I helped to sow very happily. So, to finish my discussion on Newsline, I think it was July 22nd of 2004, just about at the end of my term as state president, I got a call from Steve Hanshew telling me that Newsline had been signed into law. And I think to protect our Newsline, I think that was one of the happiest days of my life. I also served as your first and second vice presidents in the 1990s, and in 2002 ran for and was elected state president from 2002 to 2004. And a couple of things I'm most proud of. We were able to get our finances in better order, begin that process and our grant writing process. And also, I was able to begin the work with committees and get more and more people serving on committees and more committees really working within the affiliate. And I'm now continuing to live my dream as more and more of us serve the NFB of Illinois. And the more people you have involved, the more you get done, the more work you do, the more fun you have, the larger our family grows, and we are a family. And I love you all, and thank you so much.
I'm Ronza Othman, and I'm here to talk about this century. The National Federation of the Blind of Illinois has continued its tradition of commitment to projects and programs that provide equality, opportunity, and security for the blind into the 21st century. The NFBI board determined that youth development would be a high priority in the coming years. They did this by supporting the reformation of the Illinois Association of Blind Students. In addition, the affiliate has implemented a mentoring program which connects veteran mentors with newcomers at state and national conventions as well as seminars and workshops. This way, the veterans could impart the philosophy of the NFB to those who will one day lead the organization. Along these lines, the NFBI has established a tradition of holding, along with the Illinois Association of Blind Students, an annual spring student seminar. The aim is to promote the use of Braille, mobility use, and the long white cane, and positive attitudes about blindness. So far, 45 participants have attended these programs. The NFBI has also begun a transitions program for high school age students. The group meets monthly and has both a mentoring component as well as transitions, resources, and programming. The NFBI has also sent many of its younger students to programs outside the state. These include the Buddy and Step programs, the Junior Science Academy, which taught students in elementary school how to learn science using blindness techniques. Students also participated in the Youth Slam, which was the largest and most dynamic gathering of blind students around the subjects of science, technology, engineering, and math in history. The program offered intensive learning activities and those subjects along with techniques to improve the Braille and mobility skills. Illinois has sent students to the Rocket On program, which takes place through NASA. The participants who were in high school built rockets and launched them. Finally, Illinois has sent students to the Circle of Life, which was a younger science camp for 6th through 8th graders. This was biology-based and including lessons in sea life, dissecting sharks, and exploring oceans and seashores. The NFBI has also sent students to the National Association of Blind Students annual meeting the last 4 years. We believe that students must network and interact with one another in order to benefit fully from the organization. The board has also sent students to Washington Seminar, both including them in legislative appointments and also in the scheduling. The affiliate has also invited an ABS rep to many of the events in order to ensure the student leaders they have fostered have an additional resource and role model. In this decade, the average number of scholarship recipients from the NFBI has doubled from 3 in 2000 to 6 this year. The money provided has increased from $3,500 to at least $7,500. Wow. Yes, wow. By funding more scholarships, more blind students can pay for college, which means they will be more likely to get a job after graduation and be successful, productive blind adults. The NFBI has worked tirelessly to ensure that all clients of the Department of Rehabilitation Services, Bureau of Blind Services, receive high-quality services. Because of our efforts, students now know they have a right to expect that informed choice be the foundation of services. In addition, the National Federation of the Blind Training Centers have been added to the approved vendors list. In this decade, we've seen a substantial increase in the number of Illinois blind clients who have attended and graduated from NFB training centers. One of the most unique programs begun here in Illinois is that of the internship program. Each year, several students receive funding for internships in their vocational field. As a result, students are able to obtain that first job, begin building their resumes, and gain confidence in their own abilities, as well as show the public about the abilities of blind people. But youth aren't the only group that the NFBI has begun to develop. The parents' division is well on its way to re-strengthening. We've held a senior and possibilities fair to reach out to the elderly blind population, which will grow significantly in the coming years as the baby boomers age. We've begun having kid camp at convention. We've redoubled our efforts with Illinois' vendors to serve as an active resource and also to advocate on their behalf. Illinois took a leading role in helping fundraise for the Jernigan Institute, which opened its doors in 2004. It is the only research institution for and by blind people. Along that line, our members have been very active participants in the annual March for Independence, which raises funds for the Imagination Fund. We have also seen the introduction of the KNFB Reader Classic and the KNFB Reader Mobile. These devices are the first handheld machines that can take a digital image of a document and convert it to an audio text. This decade has included a new emerging threat to the ability of blind people to travel independently in the form of the hybrid vehicle, which emits very little or no sound at lower speeds. The Illinois affiliate, through hard work and dedication of Debbie Stein, has led the charge to require the auto industry to create a minimum sound standard, thus ensuring blind people can hear quiet cars coming. Illinois has worked tirelessly on legislation, both at the state and federal levels. We have, through our advocacy, persistence, and persuasiveness, gotten a technology bill enacted here in the state. The Act ensures that government agencies, including colleges, use software that is accessible to blind and print-disabled users. In addition, the Higher Education Accessible Materials Act, I see Bob coming up to tell me I have to hurry up, ensuring that students get their books on time in a format they can use. We saw the enactment of the Help America Vote Act, which allows members, blind people, to vote unassisted for the first time ever. Congress enacted the first bill to commemorate the 200th anniversary of the birth of Louis Braille, which would go further than any previous initiative to promoting Braille literacy. The members of this affiliate have played a key role in each of these bills. This decade has also seen an explosion of technology. We have two listservs in the state, IllTalk and iAppsTalk, which we use to discuss issues important to the blind. But it has been a challenge to secure our ability to use new technologies. We've had to file lawsuits against iTunes, Cardtronics for accessible ATM, and Target to ensure we can shop online just like everyone else. Again, Illinoisans answered the call by participating in surveys, research projects, and even depositions in order to maintain our access to technology. We've worked on several initiatives that have yet to accomplish the goals we envision for them. We are still working out a way to make touch screens at points of sale accessible. We are still working on Social Security reform so that working is no longer... there is no longer disincentive to work. We've seen the reauthorization of the ADA several times, and yet accessibility is still an issue. Overall, in this decade, we have seen a change of leadership, but not of focus. It has been a time of transition and growing pains. We are trying to respond to changes in needs while still fighting for high-quality rehabilitation services, a superior education at the Illinois School for the Visually Impaired, an IDEA implementation that ensures students learn Braille, assistive technology, and how to travel with a long white cane. We've also been dealing with public transportation fare increases, service cuts, and an out-of-date and often non-existent public transportation infrastructure throughout the state. We have a great deal of work ahead of us. We have seen the emergence and growth of several leaders in this affiliate, including our current president, Patty Gregory Chang, but we've also lost some vital and beloved members, including Brian Turner, president of the Kankakee Heartland chapter. This has been a time of growth and renewal. It has been a time of recommitment and continued dedication. But overall, we've maintained the same NFB philosophy, that which emphasizes the ability of the blind, that which founded the organization 40 years ago. And next up, we have Mary Lou and Bill to wrap it up.
Our late President Jernigan, when people would come to leadership seminars, used to ask, as he would meet with us individually, he would say, "Well, Bill, what did you learn today?" And, you know, I would think through what we had talked about, and then he would say, "Well, what did you teach today?" And, you know, both of those elements, you know, learning, teaching, and doing, that's the continuum. The way we approach issues changes, but all of us can have a part in that continuum, and I intend to keep doing so.
And I only have one last request of all of you. If you could pick up your little freedom bells and ring them as hard as you can. Go! All right. Thank you very much.
My ding-a-ling, my ding-a-ling.
My chair is right.
I think we need to give another, at least a round of applause for the 40th anniversary planning committee. I've heard several times at this convention that where we're at today, all the advances, the position that we have now is based on the work that's gone before us, of all the people that went before us. We still have a long way to go, but as you heard tonight, it was certainly different 30 and 40 years ago than it is today. We owe a debt of gratitude to all those people who came before us. Would the scholarship recipients please come forward? And then, Leanne, could we have a door prize?
There I am. I pushed that first. Okay, the next thing I have is a bag with some chocolate, and I don't know what. There's a small radio in here. And we have a necklace, and there's one more thing in there that I can't see in the bottom of the bag. And that goes to...
Quickly.
Mike Sternman?
Okay.
Gone?
Draw again.
Okay. Christy Dennis.
Can you do one more real quick? One more door prize. Quickly.
Yes, sir. We have a CD player with AM/FM radio.
Oh, right.
And that will go to Alan Glickman.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now I would like to present Debbie Stein, who's chair of our scholarship committee, and she will talk about the 2008. NFB of Illinois scholarship recipients.
Welcome, everyone. This is really a highlight of the year for me, and it represents the culmination of a year of hard work by myself and by the scholarship committee and the commitment of the whole affiliate to keep this program alive and thriving. So I want to take this opportunity to thank the members of the 2008 NFBI Scholarship Committee, Kelly Doty, Nancy Gardner, Ronza Othman, Debbie Pittman, Kathy Randall. Thank you very, very much for all of your hard work. And I would now, I now have the pleasure of introducing the scholarship class of 2008. Our first three scholarships are named for Kenneth Jernigan, our former national president. And the Kenneth Jernigan scholarships are in the amount of $1,250. And the first Kenneth Jernigan scholarship goes to Joseph Bine. Joseph, thank you. Joseph is a freshman at Millikan University, majoring in theater. Our second scholarship, a Jernigan scholarship for $1,250, goes to a freshman at the University of Illinois at Chicago, majoring in English, Lily Diego. Our third Jernigan scholarship for $1,250 goes to a gentleman from Southern Illinois University getting a bachelor's degree in social work, Nimoy Malcolm. Our next two scholarships are the Mary McDill NAFIDE Awards. They were named by Richard NAFIDE in honor of his mother, Mary McDill NAFIDE, who lost her sight toward the end of her life. And the first of the NAFIDE Awards, valued at $1,500, goes to Roseanne Gragas. Roseanne is a freshman at Prairie State University, and she plans to major in astronomy.
Congratulations. Thank you. I'm just in North Prairie State Community College City University. I'm sorry.
She just corrected me. Rightly so. It's Prairie State Community College. And she will go on to university, and she plans to go on to the PhD level. So that's why I had university in my head. Our next NAFIDE award goes to Howard Wilson. Howard is a junior at Chicago State University, getting a graduate. He's a graduate. I always worry that I'm going to mess this up. I always do. He is a graduate student in a master's degree program at the Chicago State University, majoring in counseling. Our final award is something very special, not only because it is valued at $2,000, but because it's named in honor of Peter Grunewald, who was mentioned earlier in our history, in our 40th anniversary history that you heard, because he played such an important part in our legislative history and working on things like the Illinois Jury Bill and the Illinois Braille Bill. The Peter Grunewald Scholarship for $2,000 goes to Michelle Wesley.
Thank you so much for my mentors this weekend. This microphone's a little bit high, so I don't know. Oops. And I'm dropping things, too. It's really late. Sorry. But I'd like to thank you all, especially my mentors this weekend, Kelly Doty and Nancy, who I just met, which was really fun, and tomorrow, Ronza. We're going to have fun. And to everybody at this convention for giving me the opportunity. This will definitely help this semester. It's been a rough time since I wasn't able to work over the summer, so this will definitely help towards my tuition. Thank you so much, everyone.
And I neglected to tell you in my excitement, Michelle is, she's the one who's a junior. She's at the University of Illinois at Urbana, and she is... She has an unusual major. She's majoring in animal science, and she plans to go to veterinary school and become a veterinarian. So that's the scholarship class of 2008. Congratulations to all of them.
And thank you, Debbie Stein. I don't know that she got the appropriate hand for her, too, for all the work that she does, a tremendous amount of work involved in the scholarship committee. I want to get our keynote speaker up here quickly, Mark Riccobono, but first of all, we got door prizes. We got to get rid of these door prizes, right? So let's see if we can get at least two of them, and then... we'll close the evening with the rest of them.
I have a kitchen selection here, and it's going to go to who? Claire Bean? Claire B-E-I-N. Claire Bean? Is that Thomas's? Yay, Bine, okay, there we go.
Claire Bean.
I'm sorry. Yes. Yep, okay. And then I have another one of these little thingamajigs in here that, you know, makes kind of a lot of noise, and I just love noisemakers. I'm sorry, I'm a noisemaker person. But that, and that's got some universal lids to go with it. And that's going to go to...
Eduardo Edmino.
Eduardo Edmino. Are you here, Eduardo?
Go on.
Go on.
Draw again.
Drawing.
Roberta Glickman.
Whoa. All right.
Okay, our keynote speaker tonight is Mark Riccobono, and we had our crack investigative team from the NFB of Illinois looking into his background, and are you squirming over there, Mark? I said, are you squirming over there?
Yes.
No, I was amazed when I looked at the accomplishments of this young man. It's just unbelievable. He was born in Wisconsin. He went to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And while he was still a student at the university, he formed the Wisconsin Association of Blind Students at the age of 19 and became its first president. And when he was 22, he was elected a state president of the Wisconsin affiliate and served in that capacity for two terms. And while still in his 20s, he was appointed to be the director of the Wisconsin Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. This was based on his very deep interest in education of blind children. That was amazing to me. Here was a man in his 20s being appointed to that position. He resigned that position in 2003 to accept a position as director of education at the newly formed Jernigan Institute at our national center, the NFB National Center in Baltimore. And in July of 2007, he became the executive director of the Jernigan Institute. So without any more delay, here is Mark Riccobono.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Hey, it is truly a pleasure to be here at this place, at this time in history, that all of our paths converge. And it's really an honor to be able to share this with you this evening. You know, I'm wondering if you all can do me a favor, though. I know that we're streaming this, and one of the real reasons that I can be here with you is that I have a very loving and supporting wife, and she has to put up with me being on the road quite a bit. She's probably listening in. Well, I hope she is. The only reason she might not be is if our son is still awake, in which case she's really not having a good time because, you know, it's like that would be like 10:45 on the East Coast or something. So I wonder if the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois would give us a big hello, Melissa, for me. Thank you. I appreciate that. We miss you. I miss you, Melissa. I love you. I wanted to do that because it's really, we all truly do come to this place from many different angles and from many different paths. And the fact that we get to share this opportunity together is really special to me. I want to talk to you about cultivation and harvesting. It seems like it's that time of year. You know, Cicero once said that the cultivation of the mind is a kind of food supplied for the soul of man. Now, in thinking about what I might talk to you about in terms of cultivation and the National Federation of the Blind, and being a Midwestern boy myself, as you've already heard, I thought corn was a good topic. So I thought I'd talk to you about how to grow good corn. You see, it works in Illinois. It's not quite Iowa, I understand. And, you know, in the National Federation of the Blind, we don't just invite you to the corn roast. You know, we teach you how to grow it. There's really a couple key elements in the National Federation of the Blind in order to grow good corn. The first thing is, you know, the National Federation of the Blind provides us with our own personal plots of very fertile land nurtured by years of tender, loving care by leaders, grassroots members of the Federation. Secondly, where we don't have the resources, the Federation provides us with the tools we need to get started. The kernels of wisdom held in our unique philosophy about blindness, first articulated by Dr. Jacobus Tenbroek so many years ago and carried on for the last 68 years. The unique thing about growing corn in the National Federation of the Blind is that we benefit from those who help around us, who help us to grow the corn. And the Federation does this for every blind person, whether they put their hand on the work and try to help us or not. We're there for every blind person. But one other truth about blindness is that there are elements that work against us. Blindness is constructed in many ways in society. And I like to liken this to weeds that grow up around us. So let me tell you a little bit about how I grew up and some of my experiences, and then I'll come back to talk a little bit more about corn. You already heard that I grew up in Milwaukee, and I was diagnosed with glaucoma at age 5. And please, I know that many of you can relate with a lot of the things that I'm going to say. My parents were well-intentioned. They didn't know anything about blindness. They didn't have any blindness in their background. My parents are Midwesterners, but neither of them went to college. They relied on the professionals to tell them about blindness, to help them construct what the future might look like for their son. I didn't really know I was blind. Don't know if you can relate to this. I just thought I was different. I'd lost vision over the years, so I didn't think much about it. I mostly did all of the things that you might want a young boy to do. I rode a skateboard, and I rode a bicycle, and I jumped out of second-story windows. Well, I did that, but maybe you wouldn't want your son to do that. I was very active, and I did well in school in the early years. But early on, I learned that there was something about this eye problem that I had, and I had two modes for dealing with it. I'd either pretend that I saw whatever it was that I was supposed to be seeing, the thing in the distance or letters on something, or I pretended I was totally indifferent to it. This strategy worked pretty well in the early years. And I could get by with that. I didn't have any other understanding about blindness or any real tools to deal with it. And my parents didn't have tools to give me. I got into school, and starting in about third grade, I started using large print books. In fourth grade, I did have a professional that was trained to work with blind students. Mostly what I remembered that she did for me was help me fill in blanks on the mimeograph sheets that I couldn't read. This was sort of a high-class reader, you might say. In fifth grade, and one of the things I learned from my parents was that I had to work hard, and I figured that that's just what you did when you were blind. You worked hard. You mean you have to work extra hard, right? If you can't see so well, it's just the way it is, man. There's no way around it. So I learned to do that. And in fifth grade, the large print books were pretty hard to read. But I also had this monocular. So I started reading the books with my monocular. Now, monoculars are designed for distance viewing, but I put it on the setting so I could read as close as possible. I was getting by. I was doing okay. I was flying under the radar, and because I was getting by, no one ever noticed that I might have something different to offer. I didn't complain. I just worked hard. But the weeds were actually growing around me. In sixth grade, PE seems to stand out in sixth grade. I don't know what it is. One of the things you were supposed to do in one of the classes, PE classes we were in, was run a U-shaped pattern, and at the peak of the U, you were supposed to catch a football. Now, this I fully understood. I understood what the shape of a U was, and I understood how to run, and I understood the concept of where the peak of the U was. None of this was a problem, and I even knew the football was coming. I never caught the football, though. And some of the kids were in the background snickering and that sort of thing, and I was quite upset about this. Well, my PE teacher, Mr. Budris, sat me down afterwards, and he wanted to help cultivate something new for me. So he said, "Don't worry, Mark, someday you'll get contact lenses and everything will be just fine." And I say he wanted to cultivate. What did he want to cultivate? Well, he wanted to cultivate a hopefulness that someday I would have restored vision. Someday I would be able to be like everybody else. The weeds kept growing all around me. The understanding that vision is a requirement for success kept growing all around me. Same thing happened through middle school. I was able to very successfully fly under the radar. I was getting okay grades. But here's some of the reasons I was getting okay grades. Let me tell you about eighth grade science. See, now this is not really best educational teaching, I understand, but in eighth grade science, the first thing that you did when you came in the room was you copied down what was on the board. That was the first thing you did every class period. Now, I couldn't see what was on the board, and I certainly wasn't going to go up to the board and try to see if I could see it. I don't even remember how I got it done. I probably didn't even have to write it down. Because I didn't have to do the work, at least that part of the work, I ended up hanging out with the folks in the back of the room. Now, this is not what you would call the intellectual bunch. But I will tell you that I became an expert at something called table football. Maybe you know about this. You take a piece of paper and you fold it up into a little triangle and you flick it back and forth. It's very stimulating. Not intellectually, but, you just hanging out in the back. But I got by, and I got good enough grades that no one paid attention, or if they did, they weren't sure what to do about it. I chose to go to a high school in Milwaukee that happened to specialize in business. It just so happened, I thought business was something that was interesting. I thought I could do that. Just so happened that that school also had a resource room for blind students. I never knew another blind student until I got to high school. I never knew there was anybody else that was even remotely like me. I wasn't blind, of course. I think by that time I was visually challenged. The terms change over the years. I didn't know any better, and in high school, though, the weeds start growing even faster. I was finally around some blind people, though, and the teacher that we had in the resource room was actually blind, but I didn't know that till later. He had RP. He never used a cane. He read Braille with his eyes. And I figured there were two classes of kids in the resource room of blind students, and I was better than both of them. There were the folks that they couldn't see so well. They were totally blind or saw worse than me, so I was better off than them. And then there were the kids that just didn't work as hard or weren't as smart as I was, so I was better than them. I figured I'm doing great. Well, I thought, yeah, I'll get into stuff in high school, so let me get into debate. Now, I didn't know Braille, and it was getting much harder to read print, so I had to memorize the debate speech. And I did this my freshman year, and I hate to be stereotypical, but I did get paired up with a member of the football team, and it did confirm certain stereotypes about guys on the football team. So I would have to memorize the speech, and I'd give the opening speech, and then he'd go up there and say something, and he'd come back, and I'd say, well, why'd you screw that up? And then he'd tell me to go fix it, but of course, I couldn't read any of the notes or anything. I mean, once I got past my little memorized part, I was lost. The weeds catch up with you. I went back the next year, wanted to join debate again. Things were a little busier. Finally, the debate coach came to me and said, you know, you haven't memorized your speech. You can't be on the team. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't participate. I got off the team. I didn't have an alternative. I didn't know what to do. But I thought I'd be all right. I slid by. I worked 2 and 3 times as hard. But I was still very active and doing things that you would want young, visually challenged man to do. I went to prom, and I learned a whole set of skills, by the way, on how to pass. Prom is a good example. Prom night was wonderful. And I had it all figured out, where we were going to go, and the place that we were going to had steps, but I knew that ahead of time. Of course, I didn't use a cane. And I had the camera, you know, and we went to this restaurant, and apparently, I had forgotten or didn't realize that the doors into the restaurant were glass doors. So I walked straight into the doors. But don't worry, I had plan B, which was I could play this off. So I opened the door real quick, real cool, you know. I said, oh, you know, what an idiot. I was looking down at the camera. You know, I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to where I was walking. You know, I could do this all the time. And I was constantly thinking about, what's the next thing I'm going to have to see? Where am I going to have to go next? What am I going to have to do? It draws on your energy, and the weeds keep growing all around you. Fortunately, I was encouraged to go to the University of Wisconsin because my grades were good enough by the teacher who I didn't know was blind until he took me to the university. It's the first time I ever saw him use a long white cane, and I thought, well, there's something different here. What does this mean? This is the same teacher that also told me, by the way, that when I was a senior that they could teach me Braille if I wanted to learn it. Now, when you're a senior in high school and you're faced with that prospect with no reason to want to learn it, it doesn't seem like a good idea. I graduated from high school, and I was given a fold-up cane for graduation. It was a nice parting gift. I didn't know what to do with it, but I did figure when I went to college that I went for orientation, and I thought that it would be a good idea to use the cane because I don't want to fall downstairs in front of co-eds. That wouldn't be. So I did use the cane for a little while, and then it kind of found the closet corner, and it didn't matter anyway because I was studying most of the time. 2, 3, 4 times as long as I had to, because I didn't have any alternative. I didn't think there was any other way to cultivate my future. Once in a while, I get brave, though, and want to go out to a party and have a good time, you know. And so I went out with some friends one time, for example, and it was dark, and suddenly someone said, well, let's take a shortcut. Let's take a shortcut, you know. That seems like a good idea. So you go up over the hill and you come down over. Well, there's some train tracks. Well, I fell over the train tracks. And it always happened this way. The weeds would always trip me up. Forget it. You know, I didn't really want to go to the party anyway. I think I have a paper that's due in 3 weeks. I better get started on it. I really didn't want to go to the party. This is how it was. Constantly worried. What am I going to have to see? Constantly limiting myself. Fortunately, in 1996, I got a scholarship from the National Federation of the Blind of Wisconsin. I'd been applying for years. They sort of caught on to the fact that I kind of thought I was better than the folks that saw less than me and figured I was smarter than everybody else, so they took a little while to give me a scholarship. I got a scholarship, and they said, we're going to put you on a plane, and you have to show up in Anaheim, California. And I scratched my head and said, that's great. Maybe this is a good time to bring that cane back out. I'd never flown across the country by myself, so I did pull the cane out, and I showed up in Anaheim, California, and this didn't drive me off. I'm not sure what it meant, but you know, I was the hotel that the affiliate was putting me up in was the Penny Sleeper Inn, and this worried me for a little while. I don't know if anybody remembers the Penny Sleeper. Oh, luckily, they got me out of there after the first night. Into a new hotel, but I was ready to run off after I saw the Penny Sleeper. It was this little dump hotel. But I went over to the main hotel, and I figured out there was something different. There was something else to be cultivated. People were doing things that I wasn't doing. And by the way, they saw less than I did. And by the way, there was a whole bunch of people that seemed a lot smarter than I was. And they saw less than I did. What is going on? The cultivation was different. And I started to learn that maybe there was a different way to view life than I was viewing it. I was there, and I went to lunch with some folks who were leaders in the student division. And I remember we're there and we're in our suits, you know, and it's Anaheim, it's hot, and suddenly someone says, well, you know, I'm late for a meeting, we got to run back to the hotel. And I thought, no, this guy is late, why do I have to run back, you know? blind people running down a boulevard in, you know, 105 degree weather with white canes and suits. What is this? This is not what I had thought blindness was. This led to a number of hard seasons for me of planting and struggling to understand a new way to cultivate in my life. And I struggled to believe, to really understand what the Federation was saying about blindness. And it wasn't easy. I finally learned Braille in 1997. Over the summer, I finally had found someone who taught me why I might want to learn Braille. And I began to think about what blindness meant in a different way. But no matter what you do, the weeds always grow around you. And I started to figure out that one way I could rip the weeds out was going to these chapter meetings where I could talk with other blind people, going to national conventions, discussing my blindness, and even just calling up a friend and going down to the coffee shop. There actually were people who cared about me. There was a network out there that was available to learn something different about blindness. There was a new way of cultivating than I had thought there was. I was challenged when I first came to the Federation to really decide whether I believed what was going on. Well, I graduated from college with a job, and I was state president at that time, and I thought I had it all figured out. Then someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, look, your job doesn't start for a couple months. Why don't you go to an NFB training center? I didn't have a good excuse not to go, so that's why I went. No, I was challenged again. I thought I had it figured out. I'm doing great, man. No. That experience crystallized for me really what it means to live as an independent blind person and how to really grow good corn, you know, because it doesn't end there. It doesn't end when we get good training. It doesn't end at the point that we think we have it figured out. Well, let me get back to corn and pull this all together for you. I got to thinking about a story that I once heard about a farmer who consistently grew award-winning corn. You know, each year he entered his corn in the state fair, where it won the blue ribbon. One year, a newspaper reporter interviewed him and learned something interesting about how he grew it. The reporter discovered that the farmer shared his seed corn with his neighbors. How can you afford to share your best seed corn with your neighbors when they're entering corn in competition with yours each year? The reporter said. Why, sir, said the farmer. Don't you know? The wind picks up pollen from the ripening corn and swirls it from field to field. If my neighbors grow inferior corn, cross-pollination will occur and steadily degrade the quality of my corn. If I am to grow good corn, I must find ways for my neighbors to grow good corn. The farmer was very much aware of the connectedness of life. His corn could not improve unless his neighbor's corn improved. So it is with the blind, the National Federation of the Blind. Those who choose to be independent must help others to be independent. Those who choose to live well must help their blind brothers and sisters to live well. The lesson for each of us is this. If we are to cultivate success and growth within ourselves, we need to do the same for others. The Federation gives us the rich soil, the tools, the kernels of wisdom in our philosophy. But if we leave it at that, we won't truly be able to cultivate. No matter how skillful we think we are, we won't truly be able to succeed, because it's that element of teaching and giving that makes the difference. Well, let me close by giving you an example. Here's Mark Riccobono. He's been blessed with many opportunities. He's been blessed with the honor and challenge of being the executive director of the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute. He, as I already mentioned, has an outstanding wife, Melissa, a beautiful baby boy, Austin. We own a home. We're living the American dream. We're healthy. We still have some savings, even in this economy. It's not an easy thing to do. We truly have been blessed. Melissa and I are both blind. Melissa has a job selling toys. I have a job. We're doing pretty well. Maybe we don't need the National Federation of the Blind. Maybe it's okay to give back now and then. Charity's a good thing. But do we really need the National Federation of the Blind? Well, let me give you a couple of examples. As you know, when we have youth programs at the National Center for the Blind, now and then we get out the chainsaw. I won't go through the story of how this came about, but now and then we'd knock on the door and say, Dr. Maurer, we need you to come teach these kids how to use the chainsaw. And one day Dr. Maurer said, look, someone else has to start teaching this. I'm not going to be doing this forever. I thought, well, that's good. We should look around and find someone to do that. So one day we're working with the chainsaw, and he says, now, all right, I'm going to pass you the saw after I start it. And I thought, you know, we hadn't rehearsed this little bit. And he said, all right, you know how to do this now. I'm going to come watch, but you're going to teach it this time. And, you know, running the chainsaw and teaching it are two entirely different things, and I didn't really view myself as the teacher. I didn't think I'd be competent to do that as a blind person. Well, as anybody, I didn't think I could do that. I was in my comfort zone. I could just, you know, watch people do it. It seemed kind of good. Stand in the background and push a teenager up toward Dr. Maurer, and he did all the work. You know, I was comfortable. Well, I worked with a young lady. We cut the first piece of wood, and Dr. Maurer stood there and watched, and he said, well, seems like it's under control. I'm leaving. Man, okay, great. I've done this now with probably 150, maybe 200 people. It's still difficult, but it pushed me to a new place that I didn't think I would be. And that's an example, but that example has guided me to push myself in other areas that relate more closely to blindness. And then there's the public attitudes and how we deal with them. You know, it's sometimes frustrating to be a blind person out in the world. And one day I got a knock on the door from Sally. And I thought, oh, God, Sally has come to tell me that something is screwed up. You know, the blind people have, she's going to complain about the yard, that something wrong with the blind person's yard, you know. I was having that sort of day. Well, earlier that day, this is what exasperated it. I was being sort of a typical guy. I went to pick Austin up. He was being watched by a couple of friends, and we had the stroller and all this other stuff. I didn't really plan ahead, so I just figured I'd carry everything. And I had far too much that I was carrying, plus the stroller, plus my cane, and I'm walking down the street. And Sally sees me and says, "Mark, can I help you?" And I'm thinking, "No, I'm fine," you know. And I attribute it to blindness. "You think I can't do this because I'm blind?" I was having that sort of day, right? And I was only like 5 feet from home. That was the other thing I was kind of frustrated about. So that night, Sally comes to the door. I'm thinking, great. This is the last, you know, I'm tired of people bugging me because I'm blind. I open the door. "Hi, Sally, how you doing?" Sally says, "You know, I'm having trouble opening this jar. Can you help me out?" Man, what was I? I was letting the weeds grow again. Got to get around my friends in the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois and take care of that. We can't avoid it. The weeds will continue to grow around us unless we work hard to cultivate. That's why we need the National Federation of the Blind. If we stand and say we have it all figured out, the weeds will catch up with us. We need our blind brothers and sisters, not because it's good to give to them, but because their work gives to us, pushes us farther, helps us go to places that we didn't believe. And no matter at what place we are in our lives, we need that consistency. We need that growth and development. We need that cultivation of our mind and our soul. That's why in the 40 years of the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois, you've needed each other. You've needed a national organization, and it has needed you. That connection cannot be broken because we have that sort of spirit in this organization. And the love that I've seen this weekend, I know that there's 40 more years to go. In closing, I want to say that I need your involvement in the Federation. In our Jernigan Institute, in the Imagination Fund, in our March for Independence, in your local chapter. And likewise, I recognize that you need my cultivation. I carry the tools the Federation has given to me, and I'm prepared to do the work we need cultivated so that we may have the best Federation crops possible. We have more opportunities now than any time in our history. We also have the most to lose. Now is the time to cultivate. Together, at this time, with our continued commitment, I ask you to join me in the fields, in the boardrooms and the classrooms, out on the streets and the picket lines, out in the cornfields. Together we will cultivate unimagined crops and a future full of opportunities. Thank you for having me at your convention. I look forward to the next 40 years.
Mississippi River, Davenport. What's that smell? Corn, I was singing. Corn, look, a tree. Corn, there's that smell again.
Corn,
come to blow, Missouri River.
Oh, thank you, Mark. That's a great speech. We're not going to close, but we still have a few things I need to tell you. But first, let's have a door prize. Four? Well, just give one or two right now, then.
Okay, the first one is one of these keychains that's run by your USB port digital picture frame. This goes to Denise Savant. And can I take this opportunity to thank Denise Savant for helping me with door prizes? She has done a great job this weekend. Second door prize is $20 from the Kankakee Heartland chapter. That goes to Carol Kwok. Are you in the room? Carol left. Okay. We'll draw again. How about Brandy and Nikki? Brandy, are you still here?
Yeah, we're here.
All right. All right. $20.
Okay. Save the other two for the big finale. Okay,
Brandy, we stand up so we can find you.
Right up front.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, a couple of things I'd like to tell you. First of all, hospitality, when we're done here in very few minutes, is going to be right here in the Aspen Room. Okay? The bar will be in here. The other thing I want to tell you, tomorrow, we will start out, we will have the Significant Other's breakfast at 7 o'clock till 8:15 in the Bristol Room. And then general session will start at 8:30. Okay? It's 8:30 in the agenda, isn't it? That's I checked the agenda and it said 8:30 the last time I looked at it. Okay. The last thing I want to tell you is checkout tomorrow. Checkout is 11 o'clock. So if you have bags, bring them in here into the Aspen Room. We got plenty of room to put your bags along the side or wherever. Okay? So let's do those last two door prizes.
Okay, the first door prize is the indoor-outdoor thermometer. That goes to Linda Villa. Oh. She's still here? And our last door prize is donated by the Illinois Association of Blind Students. It's a $25 gift certificate to either Red Lobster or Olive Garden. And that goes to Eileen Trischke.
Okay, I'd like to thank everybody who spoke tonight. I'd like to thank Mark Riccobono again. Thank you all for coming. And our banquet is now concluded. Thank you again.
How about a hand for our master of ceremonies? All right.